Aisle 6.
Well, we sat on the platform outside the ladies' toilets. It was very quiet, nobody around much. And the window was open. I hadn't noticed. And Alan was sounding off about the unfairness. He said, look, my wife's travelled all the way from India. He said, and she's been in the fighting line as much as me, and I think she qualifies for a cup of tea. But no, he says, she refused to be. So after a bit, the door of the ladies opened, and this lady came out with a basket. And she said, I'm sorry, but I couldn't help overhearing your conversation. She said, now I know you've been to try and get your wife a cup of tea. She said, nobody will get anything out of that woman. She says, she's a real old tartar. And she says, but I've got a flask of coffee here. And if you would like it, she says, I know what it is to feed a baby. You get so thirsty. And this major's wife and I, she had two cups in the basket. All wrapped in a towel, beautiful and clean. And she said, I can easily get some tea. She said, wait till I go in the canteen. I can get refills any time. But you couldn't get it. But she says, you're welcome to this flask of coffee. And we were very, very grateful. That was just one incident. And then another one. We got in at Sheffield. We got on the train for York, and these people, the major's wife, they were going to York too. Alan went and had a word with the station master, and he said, "Look, I've just come back from India, and I have excess luggage. I'm sorry, but it's my home here." And one thing, don't you worry about that, he said. Don't worry. And he got a porter to help to put our cases and things like that in there. Well, when the train stopped at Pontefract and we got out, I held the baby and Alan lifted her basket out that she'd travelled in. Ian got out and Alan went along to the luggage compartment and lifted out our cases, bedrolls and so on. And then a woman porter came along. What the hell are you doing with all this luggage? He said, I beg your pardon. She said, you're not allowed this. You're only allowed one case. And he said, he stood his ground. He said, this is my home. I've just come back. I don't care where the hell you've come from, she. You're not allowed this. So he prodded on the shoulder. He says, look, my dear, if the station master at Sheffield didn't mind and watched it all go in the luggage van, who the hell are you to complain? And she went crimson. He said, I'm sorry, but it's my home. It's all I've got. So across the road, there was a taxi driver that I'd known as a girl, Mr. Street. And he came tearing through the tunnel and that. And he said to Alan, look, she is well known for her bad temper. He said, if they could have got someone to take her job on, but nobody will take it. So now the man and the woman will take her job. So Alan says, oh well. But he grabbed some of the stuff and we had to walk and go under the subway. I'm carrying the baby and so on. But no, I think Alan and I had a handle each. But
so you were back in Pontefract then,
back
were you?
In Pontefract. And he said, do you know, I saw your mother the other day and she said she'd had a message that you would be home very shortly. So she says, keep a lookout, Mr. Street. So he said, here you are. Mm-hmm. And he, Alan, of course, was all marked where he'd been wounded.
Was he very badly disfigured by it?
Well, he was at first until they, he was in and out of hospital a long time. And they had plastic surgery. They took skin from his thighs and the inside of his arm. And you would hardly have known, just a sort of a crease there.
You'd had a mouth.
No. He got a 33 and a third pension awarded because of his injuries. Yes.
Did people in Britain, did they really understand what you'd gone through with that war?
No.
With that walk? Did they have anything to relate it to even?
No. I made lots of notes and my mum read them and other people. But
when you look back, are you amazed that you did get out of that?
Amazed that I survived, yes, I do. But Molly, her account is horrendous.
Molly, who is that?
Molly Birch, Anne Birch's mother.
Yes, but, because unfortunately I don't think she's able to talk about it.
She isn't, but I get the gist of it is that with her being handicapped, she had a deep boot. 4 inches, one leg, 4 inches shorter than the other, and it was built up, she wasn't capable of walking, and she had a little 2-year-old girl, and she had so many instructions to wait. I wish you could read her account.
Well, I think we will probably do that. And thank you very much indeed, Mrs. Bootland, for telling us in such detail about yours. But to finish off, what was the worst part of, do you think, your evacuation? What got you down the most?
Well, the worst day was when we had to do a double. You know, there's typhoid ahead. And we had to rest in this empty pagoda and then go on to the next camp, and that was really punishing because I laid in bed and I thought, will we ever survive this? But we did, and I think we were all the better for it.
Do you think that? You learned a lot from it.
Yes, definitely. Yes, I think it... And when we were in Fort William, we were, the first day we were too tired to do anything. But the second day, we'd all agreed on the trek, Mrs. Mansfield and one or two others, just said, right, when we get to Calcutta, we knew we were going there, we'll get to Calcutta, we're going to give ourselves a treat. We're going to go out and have a really nice tea. We'll go to the, I think it was the Grand Hotel. So we promised ourselves. Well, on the second day in the afternoon, we'd rested. We said, well, what about that tea party we said we'd have? So there were about, Molly was with us, but the little girl was in hospital then. But we went and the place was packed. So, they brought some extra chairs in. We were in a kind of a tea room, and they brought extra chairs in because there were too many of us. And Ian, he was only 8, he kept wriggling around, and he had shorts on, and he's scratching his leg. I said, Ian, sit still. He said, I can't, he said. I'm sure I'm getting bitten. And he jumped down and all the marks were on the back of his leg. So Mrs. Mansfield, she sent for the manager. Real battle length. Lovely person. And she showed him. She said, look at that child's leg. And that, so of course he was very apologetic. Just told the bearer to take the chair out and burn it. Straight away. No more hassle. He says, you see, we're so busy We've had to bring extra chairs in. This is now, I'm afraid they've been overlooked and that. But he said, no, not sit on that again.
Did you all enjoy your tea, though, that you promised yourself?
Mm. And then we went to the bazaar because we'd been tipped off that it was very cold in the hills and the children would need woolies. So we went and bought knitting wool patterns and needles, and things like that. But what upset me mostly was the second morning we agreed we'd go down to the post office and send cables to our people. We couldn't do it the first day, we were too exhausted. But the next morning we went up and we all sent a cable home, I to my mother. Arrived Calcutta safely, writing, because it costs a lot of money to send a cable. I thought, that's done, she'll be relieved. And then we went back for our lunch to Port William, and then sallied forth for the shopping. But in the morning, when we went out to the post office, we were on our way to the post office and all these people lying on the pavements. And I said, good Lord, have they nowhere to go? And Mrs. Mansfield said, just wait and see. And the police came along, the native police, and they were prodding them with their batons. And if they didn't move, they blew a whistle. And then this covered cart came up. And they were stiff, they were dead. And they died in the night. And they just lifted them up and put them in the cart. And but if they were alive, of course, they got up and walked away. But those that didn't move, they were put in this cart. And then they were taken away to the crematorium. And I wept. I thought, poverty as I'd never seen it before. Because in India, if you don't work, you don't eat. There's no handouts like we have in England. No dole, no nothing.
Well, Mrs. Bootland, thank you very much indeed for telling me so much about your experience. I think that will do wonderfully. You must be exhausted, though, because I know you haven't been well.